The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Welcome to In the Garden with UC Master Gardeners. It's June, and Tina Spindler and I are here today to talk about what's going on in our garden in June.
Hey, Katrina. Welcome to June. Can you believe it's June already?
No, I can't believe it's June.
The year is flying by. Of course, it doesn't seem like it's been much different in the seasons this year because we've had 80-degree weather, I think, pretty much since January off and on. So June may even be cooler than what we've been experiencing the rest of the year so far. But there's a lot of stuff that we can get going in June still, new things to plant. And then, of course, if we did a lot of our warm season planting already, as we were suggesting in March, April, and May, we'll get people caught up on what they should be doing to take care of all that stuff.
Oh, my goodness. There's so much to talk about today. Tina, where do you want to start?
I think let's start with veggies. I'm always one who wants to eat, right? So let's start with the most important stuff, stuff we get to eat.
Yes, my favorite too.
Yeah. So if, as I said, our listeners have planted their warm season veggies, as we suggested, in the latter part of March and into April and into May, they should have a really, really vibrant and productive garden right about now. What have you got going in your veggie garden that you're harvesting? Any of your warm season stuff ready to harvest yet?
Oh my goodness, we're getting ready with a kale and the zucchinis coming up and some of the squashes and
Any ripe tomatoes yet?
Not quite yet. We live on the north side of a hill. So we planted early, and they're growing wonderfully, but soon.
A little green yet.
A little green. We visit them every day. We tie them up every day. They're very happy.
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky in that I am eating tomatoes, but it's only because it was such a silly year. I had two tomato plants that overwintered. So I actually am having tomatoes from my last year's plants, which is pretty cool. We kind of have had tomatoes virtually all year. I think they only stopped in like January, February.
You know, I try to overwinter, and where how my house is situated and how my garden is situated, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it has to be the right exposure so that the tomatoes continue to get the warmth, and they have to be protected from any, you know, potential frost. But honestly, in Irvine, where I live, there was no frost that I'm aware of this year, at least not where I live. So it's the first time I've ever had tomato plants that overwintered. So that was really cool because it means I have early tomatoes, way earlier than normal. But the rest of my tomatoes are like yours. The ones I planted in late March and April have been growing great. Lots of green growth and lots of blossoms and green tomatoes. And the cherry tomatoes are actually starting to ripen. So I've had a few cherry tomatoes. But in June, that's when we're really going to start seeing those tomatoes ripen. So everybody get ready. If you planted those tomato plants in late March or early April, you should have tomatoes this month. And if you're like me, that'll make you really happy.
Oh, make me happy, make my family happy. Life is good with ripe tomatoes.
Yeah.
And ripened tomatoes.
The other things that you mentioned, the squash and cucumber, which are, you know, all members of the squash family, those two, I've got blossoms on mine now, and so I'm expecting to see, you know, new cucumbers and zucchini pretty soon. And as we hit June, though, one of the things we have to look out for, particularly on those squash plants, is powdery mildew. Do you get much powdery mildew?
Oh, yes, Tina. Not fun at all. What do you do for your powdery mildew?
Well, one of the things with powdery mildew, as you know, Katrina, it's best to prevent rather than try and attack it once it comes. So what you want to do is you can spray with an antifungal spray, and you can make your own with, you know, a little baking soda, a couple of drops of dish soap in a spray bottle, and shake that up and spray your squash type plants that would be cucumbers and zucchini, that sort of thing, pumpkin. And you can just give a light spray to those things before you start seeing powdery mildew. And it happens especially a lot in June because we often get that June gloom. Now, May wasn't too gloomy this year. I mean, we had a few mornings, you know, where we had to wait a little while for the gray to burn off. But at least where I live, I didn't feel that it was a super damp May. And
I think it went back and forth where I live. You know, I'm a little bit more inland in the hills in Orange, and I could tell by my solar.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
My solar output was not nearly as much as it was for April.
Yeah, because we did have a little bit of May gray. And odds are we'll have June gloom. And that just leads itself to proliferation of fungal diseases. So just keep an eye out for that. You want to catch that quickly. And one of the other things that I do, if I see it happening, it often happens on some of the older leaves, mm-hmm. you know, first. I cut those guys off.
I do too.
Just cut them off and throw them away.
That's it. Get them out of there.
Done and done. Because the less spores, fungal spores you have, the less it can proliferate. So if you see it happening on some of the older leaves of your plants, go ahead and cut them off and throw them away. I also do that on tomatoes. You know, now the tomatoes don't usually get powdery mildew, but they're susceptible to a lot of other, you know, tomato fungal diseases. And so as those leaves yellow, I just cut them off and keep your tomato plants clean. I know it's sometimes hard, especially if you grow them in cages because you can't, you know, reach some of the branches and the leaves. But I've been growing my tomato plants on trellises, spreading them out horizontally rather than letting them be a big old round cylinder
clump.
Inside of a clump inside of a tomato cage. And I have to be honest, I think that it's a lot healthier for the plants because there's way good air circulation.
I agree.
So
we do the same thing, and it's a big difference.
And if folks want to see that demonstrated, you can go out to the Farm and Food Lab demonstration garden out at the Great Park, and they use that trellising system. It's basically just posts, you know, the kind of posts that you use to stake a tree, and you get a couple of those 6 or 8 foot posts and put them in your bed where you're going to grow your tomatoes, and then you put concrete reinforcing wire and tie it to those posts and let your tomatoes grow up along that concrete reinforcing wire. And especially with these silly tomatoes that overwintered, you know, they're indeterminate tomatoes. And to refresh our listeners' minds, those are tomato plants that keep growing and growing and growing. And so you end up with these long, long vines. And what do you do with them once they've gone beyond the top of the tomato cage? Well, what usually happens is they drag the whole cage over and it falls down, or they slump over the side of the cage or break off. And so with this trellising system, you can keep tying those silly vines up to the trellis and make them grow horizontal.
You know, Tina, segueing a little bit, you talked about the Farm and Food Lab out of the Great Park. Let's tell our listeners a little bit about it, because all of us are not expert gardeners. And if you want to see what it really looks like and how to do it, you can go out there and take pictures. They're fine with you of doing that. Go and see how things are grown. It gives you a great visual. We can only do so much here on the radio.
Yeah.
And the master gardeners that run that are really, really nice. And it's a whole group of people out there that are wonderful that can explain and show. And
it is. It's a great place. As I said, it's at the Orange County Great Park. It's a 1 to 2 acre demonstration garden. It consists primarily of raised beds, and each raised bed has a theme. So there's a pizza garden and a fruit salad garden and so on and so forth. So you get to see, though, the focus is on edibles, and so you get to see seasonally what is growing. And so right now, if you went out there, you would see all of the things that should be in our own veggie gardens, the tomatoes, the peppers, the squash, the green beans, that sort of thing. You may see a few lettuce plants, a few snap peas that are finishing up, but by and large, the cooler season crops, because it does get pretty hot in Irvine, are wrapping up.
I was out there last week.
Were you?
Oh, my goodness. It was just so beautiful. And it's just so gorgeous just to wander around and look at and get ideas. And it's just healthy and gorgeous. And another thing that's really nice about it is kid-friendly.
It's a great place to take kids. Absolutely a great place. There's even a chicken coop. There's a hopscotch. There's a little lending library. There's a Good Bugs, Bad Bugs exhibit that's hands-on that the kids can, you know, spin wheels and open doors and learn about which are good bugs and which are not as good bugs for our gardens. And there's a ton of fruit trees out there, too, so you can see different techniques for growing fruit trees. And what we try to do out there is we really try to use techniques that home gardeners can use. So we espalier, I don't know, there's probably close to, I don't know, 75 or 100 espaliered fruit trees out there. And in case our listeners don't know, an espaliered tree is just one that is grown along a fence or along the side of a house. It's meant to be horizontal. So rather than a big bushy crown, like we traditionally grow a fruit tree, we just trim them so that they grow flat against a wall. And the reason that's great is because most of us have small yards.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, if you have a small yard, I have a large yard, and I espaliered several apple trees just because I've run along the fence line because I ran out of room.
Yeah. We always want to plant more than we have room for, even if we have large yards. We are always lusting after new plants, at least I am. So, yeah, go out there. It's a great way to see what you can do, what you can grow, and also some techniques for protecting things from pests. They have, you know, they'll build little wire enclosures, you know, to cover up some plants while they're small, because we do have bunnies out there. So you can just go out there and get some great ideas and let your kids run around. There's magnifying glasses at each of the beds. The kids can use the magnifying glass to look at, you know, parts of the plant or bugs or whatever. And then, of course, the best thing is that there's a master gardener on duty, you know, 7 days a week. So if you have questions, you can ask your questions while you're out there too. And the Great Park staff at the city organizes classes for both children and adults. The master gardeners teach the adult garden workshops, and then the park staff holds the children's garden workshops, and they also hold cooking classes. So you can get online and look at all of the cool stuff. There's also a story time that the park puts on for children.
I believe they're doing stuff in the month of, a lot of things in the month of June, aren't they?
We do. We have a lot of things in June. Once a month in June, July, and August and September, there will be a garden workshop. And once a month, there will also be a master food preserver workshop. So you can learn how to make jam or pickles or canned tomatoes, that sort of thing. And then, as I said, then the park holds monthly children's garden workshops on Sundays and a story time also once a month. And then they have cooking classes. So get online, ocgp.com, and you can see what's going on out there. And or also for the workshops that are put on by Master Gardeners, you can go to our website, which is uccemg.com. So, yeah, if you want to get some cool ideas for your veggie garden and your fruit trees, head on out there.
Great place to go. Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful, Tina. Thank you so much for talking about that.
Yeah.
That's great, great. Well, back to our gardens in our house.
Yeah.
And our vegetable gardens.
So if you didn't plant and you're wanting to start a garden, or if you have, like me, and probably you too, Katrina, recently been pulling out the last of your cool season stuff and you have some open spaces in your veggie garden, you can go ahead and continue to plant tomatoes and peppers from transplants. You can plant squash and green beans from seed, or you can buy transplants, but those seed germinate so fast that you do still have time to plant those from seed. And then, of course, we grow year-round things like radishes and green onions and carrots. So if you want to plant those from seed, you can continue pretty much to do that all year long.
What I don't want our listeners to think is it's too late. Now, I planted in March, I planted in April, I planted in May, and I'm planting in June also. because I want to get some rotation going out of my crops, because I don't want the whole thing planted and everything being ready at one point in time.
That is such a good point.
I'm going to go to the store this week and get some more, you know, already started guys, and I'm going to plant them so I can keep going.
I am too. I pulled out my peas, right, because they got fried in the last little heat wave, and lo and behold, I have a place for two more tomato plants. I'm so excited. But what's cool about that is when some of my tomato plants start pooping out in August, these that I'm planting in June will probably go through, you know, till October or November. So it is a great idea, as you said, to do successive planting so that you don't end up with everything all at once. And as you, my onions are about ready to harvest. When those come out, I'm going to plant some more bush beans, you know, so that when the bush beans I planted in April are done, I'll have some more bush beans still going. But that's the goal, is as you and I know, is to try and keep on going and have that food, you know, going year round.
Yeah, we just took out a bunch of onions, and so we now have, we're drying them out on our deck, and we're going to braid them and hang them.
Oh, that's such a good point. So what Katrina's talking about, and we talked about it, I think, earlier this year, if you planted what are called short day onions in January, February-ish of this year, they're maturing right now. And the way that you know they're mature is, A, you can see the little onion bulb. It looks like a for real onion. And B, the tops should be dying back. And when you see that happening, then you harvest them. And as Katrina said, you want to lay them out and let them dry out. It's called curing. And then why don't you explain to people what you talked about, the braiding? How do you go about the braiding process?
Well, last year was the first time we did it. First we put them on in nylon bags, and then I took some and braided them. And what I'm braiding is, like, anybody has a kid here, you braided their hair. I just starting off with like a few of them, and I start braiding, then I added another one in and added another one in till I got this almost this long rope of onions. And then I just hooked the onions up, and then as I needed an onion, I'd cut one off.
That is so awesome.
And it looks really pretty. Yeah. And people are like, you did that?
Yeah.
It's
so
like
cool.
Braiding a little kid's hair.
Yeah. And so what Katrina does when she harvests them is she leaves the really long tops on them, because the tops will be up to 2 feet long. You know, they'll be 18 inches to 2 feet long, those green onion
tops. Yes.
Yeah. And so when you harvest them, you don't pull those tops off if you're going to braid them. If you're going to braid them, you leave those tops on. And then I usually start with three. And then, as Katrina said, you know, after you braid that for a couple of twists, then you add another one, braid that, add another one, and so on until you have this nice long length of onions. And you can do the same thing for garlic when you plant garlic also.
I haven't done it with garlic. Yeah. I've done it with onions. You got to make sure the long greens dry out a bit before you do it too.
Right, because they'll break off if they're... That's why I say usually you harvest them when you see the tops are falling over and starting to dry out a bit. But don't let them get too dry, because if they get too brittle, then when you try to braid them, they'll just crumble. But yeah, that's a great thing to do. And then, of course, you've got this new space that you freed up by harvesting your onions.
And I'm going to go shopping for some more vegetables.
Yeah. But for the vegetables that we did plant the end of March, April, and May, they've been in the ground now for a while. And I think last month we probably mentioned side dressing our vegetables.
Could you tell us a little bit
more
about that?
Yeah. So let's talk about it again in case you didn't do it last month, or you didn't listen to the show last month. What were you thinking, not listening to the show? But anyway, side dressing simply means to take the fertilizer and put it around or in between the rows of your plants. So say you have your tomatoes planted, like I do, along a trellis, then I would side dress on either side of the row. I would sprinkle the fertilizer in on top of the soil, and maybe just very gently try and scratch it in, but I don't want to dig it in because I don't want to destroy the roots of the plants that are already growing. And then you water that fertilizer in. And the reason that you do that is because the fertilizer you put in the ground when you planted, you know, 6 weeks, maybe even 2 months ago, may be used up by now. And so you want to add it on the sides and around the periphery of the plants so that they have more nutrition to keep on growing.
Now, Tina, I could see with your hands about how far away to plant that. How far? But our listeners might not be able to.
It's not television. Oh, my goodness.
How far away, when you say side, how far on the side?
Good question.
Would you plant?
So a lot of times our tendency is to put things right next to the stem of the plant. But think about where the roots are. So the general good thing to do is to put it along what's called the drip line of the plant. So in the drip line is, say you have a pepper plant growing and you look at the leaves. If you were to sprinkle water on top of the leaves, where would that water drip? It would drip at the edge of the leaves, right? It wouldn't drip right next to the stem, but at the edge of the leaves. So you want to put it around the perimeter of that plant, not right next to the stem, but where the drip line is, that's where the growing active roots are.
So if you could see through the ground,
yeah,
you'd water where the roots were going to be.
Exactly.
Or so fertilize
and water. Yeah, you want to, as soon as you fertilize, you always want to water it in really well.
Is there I know there's some numbers on the fertilizer packages. Is there any particular numbers that you want to look for vegetables?
For the summertime, most of the summer plants that we are growing are fruiting plants, right? We're going to eat the fruit of those plants. It's not like the winter garden where a lot of what we eat is the leaves of the plant. So when there are winter gardens, when we're growing all of the lettuce and the leafy greens, those plants you could use a higher nitrogen fertilizer. And on a bag of fertilizer, there are three numbers, like 5-4-5 or 4-3-2 or something. The first number is nitrogen, and that's what gives plants the nutrient for green growth. And then the second one is phosphorus, and the third one is potassium. Phosphorus is the nutrient that encourages flowering and fruiting. So generally, when you are side dressing your summer veggies, you might want a fertilizer that is slightly higher in the middle number. So you could get one that says, if it's organic, the numbers usually stay in the single digits because organic fertilizers are usually less intense than chemical or synthetic fertilizers. So you might get a fertilizer that is, say, 4-6-4, something like that, where the phosphorus is a little bit higher. Or what I like to do and tell people who are new to gardening, look for a box that says tomato and vegetable fertilizer. Then you're done, right?
Perfect.
Take the guesswork out. But to be honest, if I still have, like I still have kale in the garden, and the kale might last the whole summer, even though typically we plant kale in the cooler season, it doesn't bolt like lettuce does. So it's just the green that keeps on giving. And I don't worry about it. I give the kale the same, because my plants are in a raised bed. And so there's kale with tomatoes, with peppers, with squash, all in the same raised bed. And they all just get side dressed with the same fertilizer. So I'm using one that says tomato and vegetable fertilizer. And everybody gets a little dose of that.
And everybody's really happy in her garden, too.
So far, so good. Although I did see a tiny bit of powdery mildew today, so got to get out there and take care of that. So that's the main thing to do with our veggies, would be to side dress and fertilize them this month. The other thing, of course, is to keep an eye out for those pests. As the weather warms up and our plants get bigger and they start maybe getting a little crowded, because if you're like me, you're always trying to squeeze in one more plant. So do keep an eye out for pests. I noticed on my little kale some aphids this morning.
Yes. Would you tell people what to do with aphids?
Yeah. So with aphids, you can do a super simple thing, and that is put your brass nozzle, the one that has a real strong jet stream of water, your watering nozzle that you can tighten up so that you get a kind of a hard stream. You can just take that and hose the aphids off, and you'll want to watch, every day or two to see if you're controlling the population that way. You probably have to do it two or three times. But after you hose them off several times, usually you've knocked them down.
And that's the easiest and quickest and least expensive and healthiest way.
Absolutely. You can also use insecticidal soap. That is an organic product. an organic insecticide, and you can use that on aphids. It actually covers, the soap covers their little bodies, and then they smother. So that is another less toxic, organic pesticide that you can use to control aphids. But by and large, I noticed the aphids today were on some of the older leaves. So just like for the powdery mildew, I just picked those older leaves off. They were too old to eat anyway, and I threw them away. And the other thing that our listeners may not know is the color yellow attracts in certain insects. And so when your leaves on your plants start to yellow, that's actually a signal to insects that this is perhaps a diseased or dying plant. And of course, insects help decompose, old plants. And so that is good in terms of the circle of life. They're coming to help that plant decompose. But when we don't want our plant to decompose yet, it helps if we pull off those yellowing leaves, because then the insects are maybe less attracted to those plants.
Tina, let me ask you a question that I was asked recently. Somebody said they had aphids on their plants, so they tore up all their plants because there was bugs on them.
Yeah.
Now, could you address that a little bit?
That is so harsh. And I understand if it's a super heavy infestation, if every part of the plant is covered with aphids, and you and I have probably seen occasions of that, but not very often. So
the plants are perfectly good to eat. If you spray those aphids off, it doesn't mean the whole plant is infected with something.
No, not at all. I had a kale salad last week, and there were a couple of aphids on a few of the leaves. Now, I threw the leaves that had a lot of aphids on away, but the ones where I saw one or two aphids on, I'm washing the leaves anyway before I cut them up and put them in my salad. So no, they're not going to kill you. They're not going to hurt you. And if you wash them off, you're not even going to know they were there. So
exactly. I just wanted our listeners to know, because they're perfectly good plants. They sometimes just have these aphids on them, and you rinse them off or you shoot them off, and you could start all over again and have this great plant to be able to eat.
Right, right. You just, like I said, you want to look at your garden often. We have a saying in Master Gardeners that the best pest control method for your garden is you being in your garden. And so just look, and like today I saw some aphids, so I took out the hose and I squirted them off, and I'll do it again tomorrow and maybe a third day, and I should be good to go without doing anything else because I've caught them early.
And then I was also asked, well, when you shoot them off, where do they go?
I don't know. I mean, they fall on the ground.
They fall on the ground and they just die, don't
but
they?
Where they go from there, I don't know.
It doesn't bother us anymore. It
doesn't matter to me. They seem to be too stupid to climb back on the plant, so I'm not sure why, but truly, the hose thing seems to work. If you catch it early and you do it several times, it controls them. So do that.
Don't give up on your plant.
No, don't give up on your plant. But I can see if they had a plant that was completely covered and the aphids had been left to suck all of the juice out, because that's what aphids do, then it might have been damaged, beyond salvaging. I don't know, but in my garden, no, nothing's allowed to get that far gone. So anyway,
just wanted to let the listeners know in case there was anybody out there with that same question.
Yeah, aphids are not the end of the world. So just they're actually a fact of life in the garden. The same as snails. And again, if
snails are
still a problem in the June garden, because typically we have those, May, gray, June gloom days. And so the snails like that cool weather. And when the weather gets hotter in July and August, you'll see a lot less snails because they don't like the hot weather and they'll go hide somewhere where it's nice and cool. But do continue to bait for snails. If you want to grow organically, be sure that you're using the iron-based snail bait, or you can put out little cups of beer for them to crawl into, or pie tins of beer, and watch them drown a happy death in beer. I think when my son was in a fraternity, he thought he was a snail, but death by beer. But that's a way to trap snails. You can put out old paper towel tubes and let them crawl inside of those, and then you just pick up the tube, throw it in the trash, go out early in the morning when it's damp outside, and you'll just see them crawling around, and you can pick them up and throw them away. I like to throw them in the street where the cars crunch over them as a warning to the rest of the snails.
Beware.
Yeah, beware. No snails in Tina's garden. June is a month to continue to plant and to maintain, control pests, give some food. And then as the hot weather comes, even though we're all going to have to cut back on our watering, the vegetable garden is not where you want to do that. If you're going to eat it, you need to water it or it won't grow. So exactly. Do be sure to water your vegetable garden to the degree that it needs it. Now you can install drip systems or soaker hoses instead of doing overhead watering. That'll help you save water. And then, of course, Katrina's going to tell us what else we should be doing, the big M word.
Well, before we do the big M word, I need to say a couple things. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to KUCI.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Now we get to talk about the big M word.
The big M word, yes.
Mulch.
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 Well, I know our listeners are probably sick of hearing us talk about mulch, but in these times when the whole state of California is going to be cutting water usage by 25%, that's a huge amount.
Huge amount.
And if we still want to grow our vegetables, you know, we're not going to cut our water usage there. We're going to continue to use our water there. But by using drip irrigation and soaker hoses and mulching our vegetable beds, we will be able to keep those veggies with the moisture that they need. And remember that mulch is just something that is laid on top of the ground. It acts as an insulating blanket. In commercial applications, farmers can use plastic as mulch. Usually in our backyards, we don't use plastic. Katrina loves to use weed-free straw, right, Katrina?
Exactly. It's pretty. It's pretty. It keeps the ground cool. It reflects light into the plants. I just am smitten with it.
Yeah, it's great. The only trouble is a bale of hay or a bale of straw is a lot. So if you do want to mulch with that, perhaps get a neighbor or two who gardens to share that bale of hay with you. Otherwise, you might not use all of it. But what you can do if you have some fruit trees, as I do, so a whole bale of hay would be way too much for my raised beds, but I can use the balance of it on my fruit trees, under my fruit trees. So it's a great mulch. Another mulch, though, if you don't want to do that, is just go to your nursery or big box home improvement store and get a bag of what's labeled compost or soil amendment and mulch with that. What you don't want to mulch with in your veggie garden are bark chips, and that's because we pull out our veggies and then we want to replant, and we don't want those bark chips to get mixed into our soil.
Exactly.
Yeah, because they will steal nitrogen from your plants because they're going to try and decompose, and in order to decompose they need nitrogen, and they'll steal it from your veggies. So don't use bark chips. Use either bagged compost or Katrina loves that straw. And I think that's pretty much covers veggies. Can you think of anything I left out on veggies? Mm-hmm. I guess the only other thing I would say is just be sure you keep tying up your tomatoes. Sometimes I swear they grow a foot overnight, and if you don't tie them up at least once a week, you're going to end up with tomatoes that are sprawling all over the place.
Oh, I would say even more than once a week. Right now they're growing.
That's true. I probably only get out there once a week, but it would be better to do it twice a week.
Oh, it's so much easier if you could go a couple times. Go grab a cup of coffee and go out and visit your tomato plants.
Yeah. And the same with your cucumbers and green beans. If you're using the vining rather than bush types of those, you'll want to be tying those up to their trellises at least once a week as well. So I think that's all we have on veggies.
Well, the last thing we need to tell them is to have fun.
Oh, gosh, yes. And eat whatever you've got cook, out there.
Eat, cook, invite friends over.
I know what I need to talk about, though, is fruit. Before we get off of food, a couple of fruit things to do this month. If you have strawberries, they're going to start sending out runners. And mine already did last month. And in order to continue to maybe get more fruit production, you want to cut those runners off. Because if you let them send out runners, they're pushing all their energy into the runners. So cut off the runners and give them a shot of fish emulsion or side dress with your veggie fertilizer. And if the weather doesn't get too hot, and keep them irrigated. And if the weather doesn't get too hot, you can have strawberries continuing through June. They usually stop by the 4th of July. But do cut off the runners, do keep them watered, and do feed them to get another bunch of strawberries this month. And then the last thing about fruit is I want to alert our listeners, if they have deciduous fruit trees like peaches and apricots, especially peaches, don't be surprised if you go out in June, right around this time, the very first week of June, and see a bunch of your little baby fruits on the ground. Don't panic. That's normal.
Tell us about that, Tina.
It's called June drop. And what happens, especially on peaches, is they send out way too many blossoms and they set way too much fruit. And the tree knows this. Don't ask me how, but somehow the tree knows it. And if you didn't thin your fruit, I think we mentioned thinning last month. Mm-hmm. If you didn't thin your fruit last month, or even if you did, if you didn't thin it enough, the tree will automatically drop some of those little fruits.
So it will help you.
And it will help you because, why, Katrina, what happens when it drops those fruit? It gives us bigger fruit, right?
It gives us bigger fruit, yes. Yeah. And it gives it more room for the fruit to grow. And so you won't have all these little peaches. You'll have nice, big, plump peaches.
Exactly. Now, I don't even have to do that this year because the weather was so weird and we didn't get winter. Well, I think we had 100 hours or less of chill this year, winter chill, which is temperatures below 45 degrees. And the deciduous fruit trees need winter chill in order to get fruit. And since even though we here in Southern California plant varieties that don't need a lot, they still like some, and we got almost none.
I know.
So I don't know about you, but I have the fewest peaches and apricots I've ever seen on my trees this year.
It's kind of sad. I also I live on a hill, and as I go down the hill, it's got this little microclimate. So the trees on the top of the hill have way less setting of fruit. And as I go down the hill, I have a little bit more.
Interesting, because the cold air sinks. And so you got more winter chill
as
at the bottom of your hill. Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah. Well, that's the advantage of having a big yard. You have different places you can plant stuff.
Yeah, so. But I also get some frost going down that hill, so I get a little bit of both worlds.
Yeah, so no citrus at the bottom of that hill.
Exactly.
Yeah. And speaking of citrus, to finish up fruit, do feed your citrus this month in June. It's a good time to feed your citrus. And we do want to, again, keep the trees, the fruit trees, and our veggie gardens watered. Take out your lawn. Convert the rest of your decorative plants to drought-tolerant plants. Save your water for things you can eat.
My thoughts precisely.
Yeah.
And also your big trees.
Yes, let's talk about that.
I have a couple of big trees that I just do not want to lose, so they are up on my priority list.
Yeah, absolutely. Your trees, you invest years and years and years in those trees, and if they die, you're going to have some great big holes in your landscaping. And not only that, it could end up making your electric bill go up, because if you lose shade trees that protect your house from heating up, then you know you're going to be using a ton more energy to cool your house when the days get hot. So as Katrina said, the other priority for your water usage would be your trees. And one thing that you can do for your trees is to water them deeply. We traditionally, with our overhead sprinklers, you know, we turn the sprinklers on twice a week for 10 minutes, you know, each time. And while that works for lawns, it's not the greatest for trees. So for your trees, water those deeply once a month. And if you can do that, then you will keep those trees alive, hopefully through this drought period, and hopefully we'll get winter rains. And the way that you want to water those is, remember we talked about the drip line. You want to put soaker hoses or install drip systems in two concentric circles, ideally. If you're going to do a little retrofitting, this is a good thing to do. And you want to do two concentric circles, one right at the drip line, and then one about a foot or 18 inches beyond the drip line, because your new roots are, you know, growing beyond the drip line. And then water that deeply. And we want that water to get down a couple feet. And so if you can get that water down a couple feet once a month, then your trees should make it through summer. But it has to be deep. It can't just be that first, you know, 2, 3, 4 inches of soil.
You know, you really have to give it a thought about what your priorities are. I have a big jacaranda and a gorgeous old maple, and they're not replaceable. They're old trees.
And yeah.
Old friends, and they, like you said, they shade my house.
They shade your house. They give you a place to sit so that you can enjoy the outside without, you know, being exposed to too much sun. They're really worth preserving. And I think our parks are going to do that too. I think even if parks allow lawns to die, they're going to figure out how to keep those, you know, great big gorgeous trees, because those are assets that last beyond our generation. So yes. So it behooves us to try and keep those.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for. I have a couple trees that we normally don't water at all, and they get enough water seasonally, but they're not. And so I'm taking a little look at it and say, you might need a little extra, and I'm having to bring a little hose out and turn it on really, really low for a while.
Yeah.
And take care of that tree.
Yeah. Now, in where I live, I have some sycamore trees, and I live next to an arroyo that turns into a creek when it rains, if it ever rains. But what that means is that there's most likely groundwater in that location. So my sycamores are going gangbusters, and it's because they found groundwater. So if you have, you know, some older trees that are deep rooted, you might be lucky enough that they found groundwater. So I think, you know, I'm going to turn the water off on those sycamore trees altogether, because they're doing their own thing.
Hallelujah. They're helping out.
Yeah. So, well, should we talk a little bit about our decorative garden?
Oh, yes, Liz.
I know, it's
hard. You know, we talk
hard
about all this drought, but
I know.
We can have some decorative, can't we?
Yes, we can. So here's my philosophy now in these drought times. I love flowers. As Katrina knows from going out into my garden, I'm like the flower maniac, so... and I am going to have to give up some of my flowering, you know, plants. And so what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to concentrate on some pots. And because if I don't use the water in an extensive flower bed, I can use a little bit of water and still have a lot of color in a few pots in my patio area, in my entryway, maybe in some, you know, flower boxes along a balcony. But just think about how much less water that's going to use than my extensive flower beds that go the whole length of my yard.
They go and go and go.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
So no more petunias or marigolds or cosmos in the flower beds. I'm going to be doing that in pots. And I'm going to do it in some pretty big pots, because bigger pots don't dry out as fast as little pots. And I'm still going to have some color, and it's going to be right by the house, because I'm going to keep these pots on the patios and at the entryway. And so where I am all the time, coming in and out of the house or sitting on the patio, I'll still get to have my color.
So you'll have your color, just maybe not quite everywhere in every square inch.
Not in every square inch. And what I'm going to gradually do, and I have this in a good chunk of my yard already, is I'm going to keep adding more perennials that use less water. And one of the things that you can do this month, it's a great month to do it. A lot of perennials only bloom in, you know, June, July, May, June, July, August. And so they are only available for sale in the nurseries at this time of year. And so it's a great time to go to the nursery and look in the perennial section and read the tags. Almost every plant tag will tell you whether it's low water, moderate water, or high water. And so look at the tags. There'll be some beautiful stuff blooming now. Kangaroo paws are one thing I can think of. You know, they originate from Australia, which has a very similar dry climate to ours. But they're beautiful, and they come in different colors from, you know, yellows to golds to reds and purples. So I'm going to try incorporating, you know, some of those into my garden. And they're perennial, you know, so you plant once and they last for a few years. And anything that is from Australia, well, not anything, but a lot of plants that originate in Australia are drought tolerant. And nurseries, because they know people aren't going to be able to plant these really water hungry, you know, flowers, are having entire sections of the nursery now devoted to, you know, more drought tolerant plants. So take a look this month. Look at some things that you think are beautiful. Maybe add those as you're, you know, removing things that, you know, you can't water anymore because you're going to have to water maybe once a week, you know, and look for stuff that's going to survive.
Now, Tina, a lot of people, including myself, I used to think water tolerant or plants that don't need a lot of water weren't really that beautiful. But there are so many ones out there, and the nurseries are starting to carry them now. And it's, you don't need to be, you won't be deprived.
You won't. I mean, for instance, think of the lavenders. Lavender are beautiful. And you know where they're native to is the Mediterranean, which is very dry, Spain and Italy. And if you've ever traveled in those parts of the world, you see lavender growing wild. And it's gorgeous. And it doesn't require the level of water that, say, our traditional color does, like, you know, petunias and marigolds. Think of those more Mediterranean types of plants. You can still create that English cottage garden look, but you'll need to do it with plants that are less water needy. But there's still lots of beautiful, beautiful ones out there. And then the other thing I will be devoting some of my water to, because I adore roses, is I will be putting a drip in and focusing it on my roses and putting some more drought-tolerant stuff in the other areas. But I do love my roses, and so that's where I want to put some of my water allocation.
And roses don't require as much water as some other plants.
No, they are, you know, your annuals are so shallow-rooted, right, that you constantly have to keep that top 4 to 6 inches water wet all the time. Well, think of your roses. You know, your rose roots are going down 18 inches, hopefully. And so you can water your roses deeply but less frequently. And so you can save water by putting them on drip, letting that drip soak down that 18 inches once a week. And your roses should be happy. They're quite heat tolerant. So as long as you know, give them their, get that water deep down to their root zone. I'm going to try keeping them. And then, of course, I'm going to mulch them so that the water stays in the ground.
And you have your flowers.
Yeah. And so then you still have flowers. You still have, and, you know, roses and lavender. Gosh, what a lovely combination, you know.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I don't want our listeners to think, I know I've been talking to some nursery people and they're just, you know, really worried that people are going to quit landscaping because they don't think they can because we have this water shortage. And I think for our psyche and for our health benefits and for wildlife, we should still be gardening and planting, but just being doing it in a more thoughtful and water thrifty way.
You know, Tina, and there's still a lot of people out there that are letting water run off their sidewalks. And, oh my gosh, you know, if you start paying attention to how you water and how often you water, and if you don't have leaks in your irrigation system and it's cleaned out, and it's amazing how much you can just save by just being heads up. Just
absolutely.
Go inspect. And if you can't inspect your sprinkler system, have somebody come out and inspect it, because a little bit of dripping here and a little bit of dripping there, it adds up to huge amounts of water.
I just did it this morning. As you know, I was out of town on a trip a couple of trips for a couple of weeks, and so I hadn't really walked my whole yard for a while. And I found one of the sprinkler heads, or maybe it's the under part of the pipe, is leaking at one of my citrus trees. So I ran in and called my gardener right away, because I'm just not good with irrigation repairs, and said, you know, get out here as soon as you can, because A, the puddle of water will kill the tree if it doesn't get taken care of, but B, you know, since I've been gone, I don't know how long the thing's been leaking, and that's going to affect my water bill, and it just makes me feel guilty because I didn't know I was wasting that amount of water.
So one thing I'd like people to be aware of is just go out and walk your garden.
Absolutely.
You know, when your drips are on or your sprinkler watering system is on, it is amazing. I mean, these things, you think you buy them and they last forever. They don't. And they have malfunctions. And there's so much water that goes to waste.
And a lot of us have gardeners because we have busy lives. And so although we may do some gardening, we have gardeners who come, you know, do our big chores or mowing our grass or whatever, and don't rely on them to take control of your controller, your sprinkler controller. They often let that thing be the same year round. So if there's one piece of advice we can give folks to start conserving water is learn how to operate your controller. And if you've lost the instructions, get the name of the manufacturer and the model number off of it and just Google it, and you'll be able to find the instructions for that, probably 95% of them, if it's not super old. And learn how to do it yourself. My gardener isn't allowed to touch mine. I do it totally myself.
Oh, same here.
Yeah.
My gardener likes to water. I mean, he likes lots and lots and lots of water. I would have the largest water bill in Orange County if I left it to him. He's a nice man. He's wonderful. He mows and blows, and he likes to water, and he is not allowed to touch it because he probably uses 3 or 4 times as much water as I would.
Exactly. And you...
And it's not that he's a bad person. He doesn't have to worry about anything.
Right. It's not on their nickel, and we're going to be paying a lot more nickels than we used to for our water. All of our allocations and the tiered rate structures are, you know, being adjusted to force us to conserve. So I think we're all going to need to invest the time and little brain power to learn how to fix our own, control our own controllers. And all of those controllers have a manual setting. And what I do once a month is I just turn it on manual during a time when I'm out in the garden and let it run through its cycle so that I can see, and you don't have to do the whole cycle. You can just say you want, on mine anyway, you can say you want it to do a 1 minute cycle on each station. Mm-hmm. And then I just walk and I see what's happening, and I carry some of those little flags, you know, that you can get at Home Depot or places. And if there's a clogged one or one that's leaking or spraying in the wrong direction, I just put those flags there and then call my gardener and say, hey, the next time you're here, wherever there's a flag, you need to fix that.
Great idea.
That sprinkler, because, you know, he probably isn't going to take the time to do it unless I hired him to do an irrigation review. But if you do it, you know, it takes 15 minutes, you know, on a Saturday. And you just do that and then allocate the actual time-consuming part of it to your gardener if you aren't handy, like I'm not handy with irrigation. But, you know, maybe you are handy and you do it yourself. And
you know, and sometimes gardeners, even like a place is getting a little brown or dry, so they turn up the water a little bit more. And if you go and look at it, it's because a branch got in the way of what was supposed to be water.
Oh, that's so true.
You just cut the plant back and all of a sudden you have lots of water.
That's the thing that you see, though, when you look at it. But if somebody isn't looking at it, then it goes undetected, and we, like you said, do the wrong thing and just try and turn up the frequency, which we can't do anymore because we're not going to have the ability to.
So it's surprising. I've spent a lot of time in my garden and how much I've gotten my water bill down.
Yeah.
Just by being heads up and what can I do and walking the property, like you said. And
absolutely. And, you know, there's a couple things that you and I are doing, I know, to reclaim our water. Even though I live in Irvine, and IRWD, thank goodness, our water district has been processing reclaimed water for years, and that's what my landscape's irrigated with. But we can also reclaim a little bit of it ourselves. When you're in the shower, I mean, everybody's talking about this, keep a bucket in the shower, and while the shower's running, waiting for it to get hot, let it collect in the bucket, and now you've got stuff, water, to water those beautiful colored pots I was talking about that I'm going to plant. You know, now I don't have to feel guilty about having those pots full of annuals because I'm using shower water to water them. The other thing that I read, which I'd never thought of, but duh, it's so easy. If you're making corn on the cob or something, or pasta where you're boiling a big pot of water, don't throw it away. Let it cool and water your pots with that. It actually fertilizes the plants too, because you're getting the nutrients from the food you cooked and you're putting it back in your pots. I thought that was a genius tip. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, do garden, do plant plants, just be wise about how you water. Okay, I think we only have 5 minutes or so left. So let's quickly talk about the rest of the stuff that's happening in the garden. And even though we're all going to be trying to take out our lawns, if we haven't done so yet, or if we just have a small lawn and we think we're going to try and keep it, here's a couple of things, lawn tips. First of all, cycle your irrigation when you water your lawn. That means if you're going to water it for 10 minutes, you want to water it for 5 minutes, and then you want to have the rest of your irrigation system do its other stations, and then have it do a second round of 5 minutes. So in other words, a 10-minute total watering time is going to be split into two pieces, or a 5-minute is going to be split into 2 minutes and 3 minutes. And the reason you do that is then the first bit of water gets to soak deeper in the ground before the second bit of water hits the ground, and you avoid runoff that way, and you get deeper penetration. The other thing you need to do this time of year, if you have cool season turf, which is the marathon type grass, is you need to raise your lawnmower, or have your gardener raise your lawnmower to the highest setting. If the grass stays tall, it shades the roots and the ground, and you have less evaporation, you know, from the, it's kind of self-mulching is what it's doing. If you have warm season lawns, though, like St. Augustine or Bermuda, those you actually keep cut short in the summertime. And they are meant to thrive in hot weather and use less water than cool season lawns. So some people may have already switched to that type of grass in an effort to conserve water. But when we get to fall, we're going to be having a show on removing your lawn altogether and what the steps are to do that and what kind of plants you can use to create a really beautiful yard without having any grass.
That's going to be really exciting.
Yes, but
really exciting.
We're not going to talk about that in July and August because it's too hot to plant those plants. Yeah. We're going to wait.
All in good time, all in good time. Right now, just be water wise and enjoy your yard.
Absolutely.
And with that, I think our time is up, Tina. I want to thank everybody for listening to us. And Tina, thank you so much for giving us all your words of wisdom and sharing your knowledge with us today.
Thanks, Katrina. Everybody have fun out there. Don't give up gardening.